Hello everyone, and welcome to On the Tee with Dr. P. Along with many things in the world, golf has changed. And what we see on the other side may be different than what we know now. In this episode, we're going to forgo the academic stats and surveys, and we're going to look more into the philosophical side of golf, but still with an academic foundation. Why do we play? Why do we keep going back? What's it all for? Let's take a look. Okay, the first thing I have to say is that this podcast is not all about the virus. It's not a discussion about what it has done to golf or what we may see on the other side. I'll say that, quote, this mess, as unquote, as we call it in the South, in a lovingly way, of course, has certainly changed golf for the moment. But golf has been through tough times before. It's seen war, it has seen other pandemics, and it's seen economic hardship, and yet here it is. Yes, we see change in the operations around our courses, and we may never go back to shaking hands, which in my opinion is perfectly fine with me. And we'll see new inventions, such as the one you've probably seen, where you can take the ball out of the hole by pulling a lever with your putter, so you don't have to touch anything. But there is something deeper about golf, and you don't have to look far to see it. Hold on to that thought, and let's take a step back first. I read an article recently that I thought you'd be interested to hear about. It's from the North American Review. And you may find it interesting to know, this publication was founded in Boston, Massachusetts, and was considered the first literary magazine in the United States. This was a literary publication which existed in the beginning from 1815 all the way up to 1940, and it took a break for a few decades. But in 1964, it was revived and it's still publishing today. Thomas Jefferson was an early subscriber, and some other famous contributors were President Abraham Lincoln and Mark Twain, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. I don't know if you know who she is, but she was a leader in the suffrage movement here in the United States. It's considered one of the most culturally relevant literary magazines in the U.S., so it has some cred, so to speak. It's not necessarily a statistical journal or anything like that, but it's certainly still academic, and it's a really, really fun read. Well, the article that I read was called Golf and the Philosophic Mind. Doesn't that make you want to go to a mountaintop and climb as high up as you can and start contemplating the meaning of life itself? Of course. Now, we've all heard the golf is life thing, the life is golf. We've heard the lessons of life, which can be found in golf, and I don't discount those at all. They're wonderful. We have heard the insightful quotes from famous players and storytellers and our own friends and family. I've heard it from my own mother, as we've talked about in a few episodes ago. But this article had a slightly different take. You see, it was written in 1922 and was written by the Reverend John Archibald McCullum. Yes, he was a preacher. He graduated Union Theological Seminary in New York and was a pastor at Walnut Street Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was able to find a picture of him, and while he certainly looks like a very serious fellow, he obviously, after reading this, he had a stroke of humor in there too. He spends the article discussing spiritual experiences, using golf as the analogy, which is pretty cool. But he also focuses in on a few major points, finding correlation between the spiritual experience and the game of golf. Now, you may have heard something like this before, but not sure you've heard it in this way. I wouldn't necessarily say they are all life lessons, but it's more of a philosophical take. Now, let's think about that for a moment. Why do you play? Why do you do it? Do you enjoy the outdoors? Is it the torture that sometimes a three-putt bestows on you yet again? Why exactly do you play? You know, I say to my students all the time, always ask why. to get them to critically think and to, you know, go a little bit deeper in between the lines. And so you could think about that in the same way here. Well, Reverend McCollum has a few thoughts about our game and the whys of it, and I want to share those with you because this is certainly, again, a fascinating take on it. First, he says, quote, "We have one of the inherent reasons for the popularity of golf for, however questionable our businesses or professional ethics, there is at the core of every person's soul a profound reverence for the truth," unquote. That's pretty good, isn't it? He goes on to talk about this for a little bit, but you can think about this on your own terms. Yes, we see how truth is a part of our game. We record the correct score on the card, right? And we don't improve our lie ever. But go deeper than that. Truth, the quest for it, and as he said, the person's soul, the meaning of it in your own life. Golf is very much a game of one. It is you and only you, and you are the one who knows the truth. Pretty good point, right? Well, another major point the Reverend makes is about doubt and a little bit about certainty. Now, get this quote. This is a long one, but this is interesting because it's true. So, quote, "With this doubt smoldering under the placid surface of his temporary interests, he seeks relief on the links and makes a drive to the green on 225-yard hole, much to his own surprise and that of his opponent, whose ball falls into the hazard short and off the course. The hole seems certain, but alas for the insecurity of it all and realized certitudes, his rival with the poise which comes with having nothing to lose makes a splendid recovery with his mashie niblick. The ball shoots heavenward, pauses as though suspended by a cord for a fraction of a second high above the green, then like a thing endowed with self-determination, drops straight to the earth and comes to rest within 2 feet of the pin," unquote. Isn't that fabulous? That is absolutely fabulous. So you've got one player who can, and much to his own surprise or her surprise, can and do so well. And then you have somebody else who has nothing to lose, can rest at 2 feet next to the pin. You know, golf brings much doubt. Can I do today what I did on number four like I did yesterday? Or how certain are you? How positive are you about your outlook on the round you're getting ready to play? What's going through your head as you're going to the first tee? But how do the doubt and certainty of your life creep into your game and vice versa? You know, we hear about this all the time, about some of the, you know, professional players, their personal lives off the course, and how that will impact their performance on the course in many cases. You know, sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's not. But why do we keep playing if we have such doubt all the time? Or on the other hand, why do some people play with undeterred certainty? It's a really good philosophical question to think about. But another point he makes is about follow through. Now, he uses a Bible story of David and Goliath, but he says that it's the second mile that counts. If we could just follow through, he says, imagine all of the mistakes which can be avoided. Amen, right? You know what happens without a decent follow through. That shot's probably not what you envisioned, but why can't we follow through sometimes? Well, that's a life situation, right? A philosophical question. But the last point he makes is the one that I find that's probably the most important. Here's the quote. Quote, "But I have not mentioned the inmost secret of the fascination that golf exercises upon its devotees. It is the game of perpetual hope." Unquote. So the game of perpetual hope. I love that. You know, the obvious correlations to golf are pretty obvious. We could hope for a better score tomorrow. We can hope to try to attain something, a goal like reaching the green in two. But I don't know about you, but every time I finished a round unhappy, which happens every once in a while, or wishing that I had just that one back, that one shot back, I've already asked Mom when we can play again. We don't even get to the car, and I haven't even put my clubs up yet, saying, can we play tomorrow? Or when's the next time we can go? Well, it's that perpetual hope that the Reverend speaks of. It's the pull of the Course. The Course is whispering for me to come back and give it another go, so I do. You don't have to look very far to see the why of golf, and you don't have to get too much into philosophy, even though this particular article did. All you have to do is look around. You may see it in that beautiful tree that you love, which you may have hit a few times, but it's still beautiful on the back nine. Maybe it's the smell of the fresh cut grass. You may see it in the laugh of the person that you're playing with. Well, I found my why the other day quite unexpectedly. Every once in a while, I do wonder, why am I still doing this? And, you know, you spend so much time and you spend so much effort playing and trying to get better. And we all know we're never going to master it, but we're still doing this anyway. And sometimes it makes you completely crazy. But as I said a second ago, you're already asking, when can I come back? Well, due to this quote mess, as I said a minute ago, the virus, at this point, we're not allowed to store our clubs at the course right now for, you know, sanitizing and all that stuff. So basically, I'm lugging mine back and forth in my car. And it's given me certainly even a more of appreciation for the workers who are cleaning clubs and cleaning carts and doing everything in the superintendent and his staff of making sure that everybody's safe. But anyway, I'm lugging my clubs back and forth, and I was leaving the course, and my clubs were sitting with me in the front seat of my car on the way home, you know, after I'd played the other day. And it's kind of funny because I look over and they're just sitting there riding along just as a person would, just facing forward. And what's even more bizarre and silly, I guess, is I started talking to them about the round that we just had together and going through almost every shot, or, you know, it's me blaming a certain club of what it did wrong, or maybe that one of them needs a regrip, or am I so mad at you that I need to leave you at home with your other friends and bring back another club? And it's funny because my Wonder Woman head cover made sure to let me know it was obviously not her fault when I missed that last putt, of course. But we drove in silence for a little while, and I started thinking about my clubs and the role that they've played for me in my life. And yes, I've gone through a few sets of clubs, but I've had these for a while, or bag or whatever. But we've been through a lot, these clubs and me, and it's so funny because they're a symbol of the years and the years and years and years I have spent trying harder and failing or trying and celebrating and even persevering. They never quit, even when I tried to. And the many times I said, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. And I was mean to my poor club, and I kind of tossed it off to the side, and there it was. They were waiting for me after an injury, saying, come on, you can do this, you know, get back out there. They're even a reminder of my mom and me getting to play together for decades. We've done this for years. So my clubs became not a sort of a tangible way or reason of why I do play. Yes, I treat them bad sometimes, and they get cleaned up and they're ready for the next time. And there they are when I'm ready to put them in my car, or go up to the club and get them. There they sit, ready to go. So they're always, I believe, a lot more positive than I can possibly be at many times. So I encourage you to think a little bit about your whys of golf. Is it again in your club? Where is it? Where is it? I think you'll find it. What are your truths, your doubts, and follow-throughs, as the Reverend would say? And what are your hopes in your soul of golf, which tend to make its way into our life somehow? Well, I saw my answer in my clubs that day. I really did. And I realized that they are an extension of myself. And I think the Reverend would be quite pleased with that truth. Well, folks, our class time is up for today. And thank goodness for the philosophy of golf, right? It may keep us a little crazy sometimes, but it can keep us sane as well. Keep us going back. And I hope you do find your why. If you'd like a little more of a deep discussion about golf, well, check out the other podcasts on the Talking Golf Network, where you will find exceptional pods which do talk a little philosophy, including the Good Good Pod with my friends Rod and Adrian. You can find me on Twitter at drkelly04 and email me anytime at ontheteewithdrp@gmail.com. So I'll see you next time on the Tee with Dr. P. And remember, always go for the flag.